I'm Dr. Kathy Miller, Professor of Medicine at the Indiana University School of Medicine in Indianapolis. Welcome to Medscape Oncology Insights, coming to you today from the 2017 San Antonio Breast Cancer Symposium. Surgery and radiation remain the mainstays of treatment for ductal carcinoma in situ, but there is a lot of change in treatment of DCIS and a lot of really critical questions that still need answers. Here to talk about the emerging approach to DCIS is my next guest, Dr. Shelley Wong, Professor of Surgery and Chief of Breast Surgical Oncology at the Duke University School of Medicine in Durham, North Carolina. Welcome, Shelley.
Thank you, Kathy. Very nice to be here.
So remind us how DCIS is currently treated.
So DCIS is treated now as it has been for the last 40 years. And just to remind everyone that DCIS wasn't even a diagnosis that really existed before we did mammographic screening. But once we started screening women for breast cancer, we started picking up more of this diagnosis of pre-cancer or pre-invasive cancer, otherwise known as ductal carcinoma in situ or DCIS. And it's one step before invasive cancer develops. And in our, ignorance to know how else to treat it, we really ended up just treating it like a cancer. And that would consist of surgery, either a lumpectomy or mastectomy, often together with radiation. So the management of DCIS really has not changed that much in the last 40 years, but hopefully we're really on the verge of making some changes now.
So whenever I hear we do the same as we did 40 years ago, either that works really well and there's no reason to change it, or we don't know what else to do.
Yeah.
Which of those is it in this case?
Well, I think for DCIS, it's a little bit of both. So because it's a pre-invasive or pre-cancerous lesion, it really doesn't have the ability to spread to any other part of the body. And if you catch it at that stage, women are almost 100% cured, if you will. I think we can make the argument, and many of us do, that many women are cured of a diagnosis that really would not have caused them any harm during their lifetime. And as a result, we're incredibly successful and we have a very high cure rate. So a little bit is that we're very successful in achieving great outcomes with the treatments that we use now.
So this strikes me, though, as one question, because since we didn't know about this diagnosis before mammograms, mm-hmm. do we really understand untreated? What is the natural history of DCIS? Are we taking credit for success that maybe was successful 80 years ago? We just didn't know about it.
So that's exactly where the controversy is with DCIS. Because we started treating it very aggressively from the very beginning, it's really hard to now dial back on the treatment and say, whoops, we were really wrong, and we probably should have been treating you in a lot less aggressive form. And I think we're really at that place with a lot of treatments in medicine now, where we started off and not really knowing any better, and with the best of intentions, we start off with very aggressive therapy. We're incredibly successful. And now it's really hard to start dialing back. It's called de-escalation, and it's a concept that I think is really gaining more traction. And the reason is because as we start really investing more into precision therapy, we're going to end up treating some patients a lot more aggressively than we're treating now, some patients exactly the way we're treating them now. But there are also going to be patients who are going to get de-escalation of therapy because what we're doing now is probably too much. And that's really where most of the activity and interest is right now in DCIS.
So how will we get there in DCIS? Because there's almost a bit of a catch-22. To understand the natural history and to figure out who needs treatment as we currently do, who maybe needs more than we currently do, who needs less, you actually have to not give everybody everything.
Yes.
So if we are reluctant to do that, how do we ever get the data to help us do that?
So I think that's the dilemma that we're all grappling with. And I would say fundamentally, we need to start off with research in a way that maintains patient safety and good outcomes. I think that really has to be paramount. We're doing such a good job with, you know, possibly the two invasive approaches we have right now. And then to dial back on it, we need to make sure that we're able to maintain the really great outcomes that we have. So I think we're starting to whittle away at the edges. We're taking The patients who have the lowest risk condition, so the DCIS that's least likely to ever become invasive. And we're starting to de-escalate or dial back on some of the treatments for those best prognosis patients. And then once we understand that a little bit better, then we can extend that to possibly other groups of patients.
So how are you defining that best prognosis group?
Well, prostate cancer did that 20 years ago, trying to define a low-risk group and recommending active surveillance. And I think when they first set out on this adventure, there was a lot of worry that we would actually be hurting patients by de-escalating. So they spent a lot of time trying to identify the lowest risk group. And now about 40% of men with prostate cancer are managed with active surveillance. So when we started doing it for DCIS, we looked back at the retrospective literature of women who had had DCIS before and looked for the group that was least likely to have any invasive cancer outcomes. And those include women who have very non-aggressive types of DCIS, the smaller ones, DCIS that occurs in older women and those with lots of other comorbidities. So if patients have lots of other medical conditions, then treating a precancer is probably not going to make any difference in their long-term outcome. So we're really defining the lowest risk group of patients to the best of our ability. And then, as you may know, we have a prospective randomized trial that we just launched earlier this year. We have about 50 sites that are enrolling patients now. And it's a prospective randomized trial where half the patients will continue to get all the standard treatment that we've been giving them all these years, surgery, radiation. Some women are getting double mastectomy for this diagnosis. And the other group is just being monitored very, very closely. So we'll see which group of patients does better. And by better, we're looking at cancer outcomes, but we're also looking at quality of life because there's no question that the treatments have been very successful, but they're quite invasive, and they result in long-term morbidities for patients. So we need to understand that a lot better.
Are you also looking at the patient's sense of anxiety, fear?
Absolutely.
Worry.
Yeah.
You know, the language here gets tricky. Mm-hmm. You know, we put cancer in the name of this condition. That sounds very frightening. Active surveillance sounds better than we're just not going to do anything.
Than doing nothing.
Better than doing nothing. And another lesson I think we learned from our prostate cancer colleagues.
Mm-hmm.
But I wonder about that difference in that aspect of the patient experience.
Right, so there's been a lot of discussion about whether we need to change the name, but we have to call it something. So I think it's not quite so much what
we'll
call it. We can call it Bob or Mary. But it's really the reaction that we have towards the patient and the diagnosis. So that's, I think, where we need to institute some education and cultural change. And you know who's leading it for the COMET study is our patient advocates. They're really taking the bull by the horns and thinking of ways that physicians can introduce the concept of DCIS without automatically making it just sound like another cancer. Mm. Because there are clear distinctions between a pre-invasive condition and an invasive cancer. And our advocates have been just so instrumental in helping to shape the language around this diagnosis so that it isn't quite so fearful for patients. And I think we have a long ways to go, but we've made a really terrific start.
So I want to ask you a bit about the impact of first impressions.
Yeah.
Because I would bet that even at Duke, someone newly diagnosed with DCIS hears about that diagnosis from someone else before they see you. Mm-hmm. And that may be from the radiologist who did an image-guided biopsy. That may fall to a primary care physician who's the one that ordered the screening imaging that led to the biopsy in the first place. It seems to me that we are often starting out in a hole. Mm. If they heard about this condition from someone else who called it a pre-invasive, even if they called it a pre-invasive cancer, they still called it a cancer.
Yes.
They may have said, so the next step is you're going to see a surgeon and have surgery, which then makes talking about maybe a different surveillance approach feel like you're starting out in a hole.
Yes.
Expectations have been set out as to what a proper course should be.
Yeah.
That you now have to walk back a bit without trashing the well-meaning, accurate people who told them this is what we currently do.
Absolutely. And I think, again, I just want to reiterate that we do the things we do. We treat patients with the best tools that we have, all with good intentions. I don't think anyone sets out to overtreat anyone. But it's a multidisciplinary sort of approach, and we start with one center at a time. And when I first got to Duke, we had a very different language around how we describe the diagnosis to patients, but our radiologists are such terrific collaborators now. They've drunk the Kool-Aid. The way we talk to patients now around their diagnosis, if it's not cancer, is very different now than it was just a few years ago. And I think with the implementation of this study, we can at least start bringing about a cultural change from the medical community and also from patients about how they think about the diagnosis. And I will say, the other big change now is that patients don't get all their information from their doctors. They get it from the internet. So even if they received a diagnosis of cancer, most of my patients before they come to see me have done plenty of research on their own, and they're curious. They hear that there may be alternatives to invasive treatment. So I think there's a lot of hope there for patients to come armed with information and to not be derailed by what they think they may have heard at the point of first contact.
This really is another one of the frontiers in precision medicine.
Yes.
Figuring out not just getting the right treatment to the right person, but actually figuring about who needs treatment. Mm. And maybe that's not everyone.
Right, right. And this is the canary in the coal mine, but there are many other conditions in medicine where I think we can learn the lessons from prostate cancer and hopefully DCIS, where we can really tailor the precise therapy for the right patient at the right time. I think that's really what we're all aiming for.
Well, good luck with the COMET study. It's a really incredibly important study for us to be able to make those next steps.
Thank you very much, Kathy. It's really exciting, and I look forward to working together with the patients and advocates to really change how we think about DCIS.
Thank you for joining us today to talk about this issue, and thank you for joining us as well. This is Dr. Kathy Miller reporting from San Antonio.